Hey, what's going on? It's At the Letters for Thursday, December 15th, 2022. Arden Zwelling and Ben Nicholson Smith, our producer, is Christian Ryan. Ben, it's been a pretty busy offseason across MLB. I think we were both anticipating it to move slowly and maybe some of the business and transacting to wait until the new year, is because that's just what we've seen in recent offseasons. But baseball teams have actually been getting their business done rather quickly this year and rather efficiently, which is nice because maybe that'll bake in just a little bit of a breath for us in the new year before spring training gets going in about 2 months. But just what are your high-level thoughts on the offseason so far for MLB and for the Toronto Blue Jays?
Yeah, I think it's been great, honestly. Like, I like seeing the activity. I like seeing the flurry of moves. It feels a bit like an old-school offseason where the winter meetings were really busy, and then even the last couple days after it have been pretty busy. I was looking at it the other day, and I guess now it would be in the last 11 days, we've seen four of the biggest 13 contracts in MLB history between Trey Turner, Xander Bogaerts, Aaron Judge, and then Carlos Correa. I mean, that's a lot of spending. And then the trickle down from there has obviously been substantial. The Jays getting Bassett, we'll obviously get to that. The Jays getting Kevin Kiermaier. So they've been, you know, relatively active, but even, you know, more broadly, it's just been really busy. I think there are more moves to come with Rodon. You know, does he get 190 over seven? Does Dansby Swanson get 175 over seven? I mean, these are a couple more big contracts to come. So it's been great. And I agree. I think it would be awesome to have January as like a little bit of a, you know, let's kind of look around the league, reset, talk about some prospects. Maybe, you know, there's always baseball going on, but I like having free agency happen right now.
Yeah, it's the good old days, man. Guys getting paid into their 40s. You know, dudes who have already passed 30 are inking big deals. Big market teams are behaving like big market teams. It's good to see. Hopefully it lasts and isn't just a post-CBA being ratified thing. And hopefully it's, you know, something that continues on for many years to come, and that MLB's owners continue to spend like we know that they can. It will be nice to go into spring training without, and we'll see, right? I assume Swanson and Rodon will have signed by then, and those are really like the two biggest names remaining on the market. But assuming they do sign by then, it'll be nice going into spring training without like some huge name out there, or without several huge names out there that can impact a team's expectations, like you said, so that we can just like take a very objective and somewhat certain view at what we expect from a team's win potential going into the year. It's kind of nice to say like, yeah, we think the Blue Jays could do X in the American League East, and not say, well, they could do X provided the Yankees don't go out and do Y. It'll just be, hey, these are what the teams are going into the regular season. We know what the win projections are and what to kind of expect. So how do you think that the Blue Jays to this point have kind of positioned themselves in the AL East going into 2023?
I think the individual moves make sense. Like, I like the Bassett move. I think that from a baseball standpoint, this is a really good pitcher. He is on a relatively short-term commitment. He will definitely help them win games in 2023, which they need to do because they lost Ross Stripling. Congrats to Ross Stripling on his deal with the Giants. But he's gone, and Bassett, really, I mean, the chances of him giving you 150 innings are definitely higher than Ross Stripling giving you that same number of innings. So a really good pickup for the short term. He's not a long-term piece. He's someone who's here for 3 years. Maybe you get a couple good years out of him. Certainly for this coming season, he's someone who can help the Blue Jays get to the playoffs. And then if they're there, you could definitely use him in a playoff game. No problem with that whatsoever. So that's their biggest move so far. That's the move that has pushed things forward, addressed their biggest need. I think along with that, there are a lot of kind of offshooting questions about run prevention. How do they get enough offense back after trading Teoscar Hernandez? They have some options there that I'm sure we'll get to in the course of the podcast. And then, you know, there's also just the possibility, at least, of adding further pitching. They're at least considering additions on the starting rotation side. They're at least considering relief pitching additions, maybe more likely to add in the bullpen out of those two categories. But if they had to start spring training tomorrow, they would have a very good pitching staff now that they've added Bassett.
I want to get into Bassett a bit deeper in a bit, and we will, but like just to kind of stay high level, it is interesting seeing the Blue Jays go into this offseason and essentially do what they've always done and just say, look, this is what we want to do. And then they go out and do it. So they said, we want to address run prevention. We want to add a starting pitcher. We want to change the shape of our offense. Okay, have they addressed run prevention? Safe to say they have by adding like a Mount Rushmore center fielder in Kevin Kiermaier and going out and getting Chris Bassett. Those are two obvious run prevention moves. And as well, the Bassett one ticks off the box of adding a starting pitcher. They said they were going to do those things, then they went out and then they did them. And they've also said they want to change the shape of their offense. So they've sort of done that by removing Teoscar Hernandez. And obviously there is more to come there, I would expect, with some left-handed thump being added to this lineup at some point between now and opening day. So that is kind of ongoing. But like the Blue Jays continually just sort of lay out their objectives and then go out and execute on them. I don't know why there's always like so much consternation or wonder about what the Blue Jays are even doing this offseason. Like they have repeatedly just gone out and done what they've said they're going to do time and again, offseason over offseason. What have you kind of made of the way it played out and sort of the sliding doors scenarios where it's, well, actually, if they had signed Kyle Gibson, are they still in on Chris Bassett? Or if they had gotten like a Heaney, would they still be in on Bassett? If they'd gone out and Don Bellinger, would they have still been in on Kiermaier? Like, what have you made of kind of the just the timeline and the chronology of events for the Blue Jays as they've kind of gone through their offseason checklist and accomplished their goals?
Yeah, it's been interesting to follow. And they definitely, as most front offices do, they consider a lot of different, and when I say consider, like I mean really consider, like they're seriously considering a lot of different possibilities here as they work their way through the offseason. I guess like first to your point about the maybe consternation or angst within the fan base, or at least some corners of it, I definitely observed that, saw that on Twitter among other places, and it's interesting. I think there's probably always going to be a subset of fans that has that anxiety about, hey, are they actually going to do something? Are they destined to come in second on all these free agents? And I see this now with like the Red Sox, right? Where like the Red Sox fans are like up in arms about what's going to happen with their team after losing Bogarts and obviously Betts a couple years ago. But I get the sense that there's been some trust that's built up among the fan base that didn't exist 2 years ago and shouldn't have existed two, three years ago before they had signed George Springer, before they had signed Kevin Gausman and Chris Bassett and basically done 20 million AAV deals every single offseason like the big market team that they are. But before that point, there was, I think, some very, very understandable skepticism. Now I sense that that skepticism is going away. At least that's the way I view things. Like, like you say, this front office has been pretty clear about what they intend to do and they have money. I mean, we're talking about a CBT team right now. They're willing to spend money. So in that circumstance, they're going to be able to find upgrades. And they've done that so far. So I think that's really interesting to observe. And within that, they've explored some really high-end names. Like, I never got the sense they were the front runner on Justin Verlander by any stretch, but they are said to have been pretty serious about him on a multi-year deal. So presumably that's more than $80 million on a two-year term. And then they wanted Heaney. Like my impression is they really wanted Heaney. And they bid more on Heaney than the Texas Rangers did and didn't get him. I think Heaney would have been great. I've talked about him a few times on this podcast, but just didn't end up happening. And in free agency, you only control so much about what you're going to get done.
Does Bassett happen if Heaney happens? Or would Heaney have kind of filled the Bassett role and then maybe you try to pair Heaney with like a Stripling even or somebody else from that like tier of dudes who signed for 2 years and $25 million.
Great question. I think that if Heaney happens, Bassett doesn't happen. And I was told it wasn't that long ago now. It was just last week that the winter meetings were taking place. But when the winter meetings were starting up, I was not under the impression the Jays were pushing that hard for Bassett at that time. Not to say that they didn't have interest, because obviously they did, but I got the sense that Heaney was maybe where they were going to start their search and Verlander, see where that goes, because you're not going to have you're not going to have four different offers out pending to starting pitchers at the same time in case, you know, what if they all accept? You know, that might be, you can never have too much pitching, but there's probably not the way front offices are going to do things. So like you said, there's kind of this sliding doors aspect where you go proceed very methodically and see what's possible. They're doing the same thing, of course, with different scenarios involving their catchers, different scenarios involving outfielders, but pitching really has been front and center as they've tried to improve this team over the course of the winter.
And you look at the $30 million that the Blue Jays spent on, or per year, that is, like the $30 million for 2023 that they spent on Chris Bassett and Kevin Kiermaier, Kiermaier at 9, Bassett at 21. Well, you could take Andrew Heaney's 12.5 and Cody Bellinger's 17.5, and oh, hey, all of a sudden now you're at 30. Or maybe it could have been like Heaney's 12.5 and Jock Peterson's 19.5 or something like that, you know, whatever it was going to be, right? And it's important to sort of remember like what the Blue Jays process is going into an offseason. I know that we've like been over this in off seasons past, but it just like essentially they do their homework on everyone and they investigate every player who could be available through free agent, through trade. They reach out, they make contact, they see what expectations are, they frame the market, they see where their opportunities might lie. And then they sort of collectively as a front office rank them in order of preference. Like, here's our preferred starting pitchers and here are our preferred outfielders. And then they sort of group those into packages almost and say, if our offseason breaks this way and we move on this starting pitcher first, well, then we would move on that outfielder in tandem with them. Or if early on we need to make a move on an outfielder because that market is accelerating or that trade opportunity is open to us, well, then we could pair them with this starting pitcher. Like, if X, then Y. If Y, then Z. And they just kind of go down and down and down and scenario plan through these various playbooks that could run out. They obviously have an ideal in their offseason. Like, if we have a perfect outcome from our offseason, it will be this player and that player. But I bet you they have never gotten their perfect outcome in any offseason. I don't know that any team does. You obviously hope for that. You obviously prepare for the possibility of that, but it's just so unrealistic that you ever get your perfect outcome. So they're constantly just moving down onto their plan B, plan C, plan D. But I think they feel really confident in their ability to navigate an offseason and get a good outcome because they have planned through and thought through all of those decisions and scenarios ahead of time.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's a good way to put it. And it's a useful reminder, too, when you see the report that the Dodgers were in on Kevin Kiermaier and didn't get him. And, you know, that's a team that gets a lot of things that they want. And the Dodgers, maybe a year from now, they're signing Shohei Ohtani and no one needs to feel bad for the LA Dodgers. But, you know, not even them, not even the Dodgers are going to land every single player that they pursue. And so that's true of the Blue Jays. It's true of the Red Sox. It is part of the process of going through the free agent period, going through the offseason, the hot stove period. And the Jays are in that now. So I would agree. I don't think they would ever have landed their perfect offseason. You know, this year, you know, would it be Verlander plus, you know, trading a catcher for like the absolute perfect controllable young center fielder? That maybe would be, you know, the dream scenario, and you add a couple relievers on more modest deals. But look, they're still going to be a good team. They already have a rotation now that's very, very good with, you know, Barrios and Bassett as your 3-4. That's a great place to be. The lineup is very good. They need to improve it further, in my opinion, but it's still a very good lineup. And I guess the part of this whole approach is knowing that even if you don't get the absolute perfect player, you're working with a lot of resources, which the Jays definitely are right now as they push past $200 million in payroll for the first time in franchise history, as they push toward the CBT and past the CBT for the first time in franchise history. So they legitimately do have the resources of a top 5 or 10 payroll team. That's good. That's the way it should be. Blue Jays are in a big market. This is a win now team. All of that makes sense, but that's as it should be. And then also, they can trade. I mean, they are in a position right now with respect to the catchers where if they want, they really can control that market and they can get something really good for one of Jansen or Kirk or Gabriel Moreno.
just sticking with free agency, like I will say this has not been a kind market to the sort of unemotional, disciplined, pragmatic front office like the Blue Jays are. And like you mentioned the Red Sox earlier, right? Like ask Chaim Bloom about being disciplined in this market and how that goes and sticking to your valuations. Well, Xander Bogaerts is now a San Diego Padre, and all of a sudden, like the pressure on you in Boston has been turned up to a million. It's interesting connecting this to prior off seasons, as you did, to the Blue Jays signing Springer and Gausman when they did, and signing Ryu a few years ago. I mean, the Blue Jays really benefited from the last few off seasons in a bit of a lack of competition for those individuals. Like if George Springer was a free agent this winter, if Kevin Gausman was a free agent a year later, those guys are signing for a lot more money than they did. And the Blue Jays are competing with a lot more teams for those individuals than they were. Like this was a very competitive free agent market for top talent. And, you know, like you think about like the Mets, the way they're splashing money around, and, you know, the Red Sox lost out on Bogaerts, but they went out and spent a bunch of money on various players. The Cubs are active again. The Padres and Giants are throwing around heaps of money. Like you really had to go above and beyond to land top talent, even in some cases, second tier talent this winter. So, you know, it is kind of interesting that the Blue Jays ended up where they did and also took advantage of the markets that they did prior, because this really wasn't going to be sort of the market for a team like them that sticks very rigidly to their valuations and makes decisions in a very unemotional and disciplined way.
And just with Gausman in particular, like if he was a free agent, I think 5 or 6 years and definitely a higher AAV than the $22 million that he signed for. I mean, if he was a free agent right now, I don't think 6150 is out of the question. The Jays now, as his contract, you know, remains with the 4 years, they have him 88 over four. Like that's a great, great deal. And that's where spending in free agency definitely can benefit teams. I mean, there are other circumstances where it doesn't go as well. And Yusei Kikuchi is an example of that. The back half of the Ryu deal, not good for the Jays. No one's debating that. But you know, if you're in a position like they were, where they did not have a lot of starting pitching coming up, all right, you got money, spend it. And now they're going to have a rotation that cost them close to $100 million in 2023. That's not cheap, but you need pitching. So, you know, they have some pretty good ones there in Gausman and Berríos potentially and Bassett. And so that's kind of what the money is for.
Do you remember like mid-season sitting in the press box with me and Shai, and we were kind of looking ahead at the outfield market because we knew the Blue Jays were probably going to do something in the outfield in the winter. And I remember saying to you, like, man, Brandon Nimmo is the guy. Like, he just checks so many boxes for this team. And then you looked at me and you're like, yeah, but are the Blue Jays going to want to spend $70, $80 million on that guy? He's you know, played maybe two full seasons. And I was like, yeah, I know that would be probably like a really, really aggressive bet on Brandon Nimmo. Yeah, how about twice that bet?
Yeah.
Like, how about more than George Springer got? And obviously, there's like a little bit of CBT jujitsu going on there with the length of the contract, but still a higher guarantee for Brandon Nimmo than George Springer. That was the one that I saw where I was like, whoa, this market is hot.
Oh, yeah. And I do remember that. I think the number I threw out there was like 72 over four, which like that's like so light compared. He ended up at 162 over eight. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
So, I mean, that's a massive commitment for a guy who's played 100 games twice. And good for him. Obviously, the Jays had interest. I mean, I'm not under the impression they were anywhere close to where the Mets landed to bring back Nimmo. But, you know, I think it's definitely reflective of a really strong market for players. And if you're looking at this from a Jays perspective and you're saying, would you copy and paste that deal onto the Blue Jays? To me, for Nimmo, that's like a hard no, like no shot. I do think like the Correa deal, 350 over 13, I want to say, yeah, I would think about copying and pasting that one onto the Jays. I know that sounds like pretty aggressive, but I would think about that. The Bogaerts deal, I would think about that. But the Nimmo deal, no chance, no interest in copying and pasting that one.
Yeah, the Baltimore Orioles should have signed Carlos Correa, and I'm 100% serious about that. Like, they 1,000% should have signed him. With the Blue Jays, like, it's interesting, right? So you think about who have they lost from last season. Well, you lost Ross Stripling and David Phelps on the pitching side, and then you lost Raimel Tapia, Jackie Bradley Jr., Bradley Zimmer, and then he traded Teoscar Hernandez. So how do you sort of replace that production and that playing time? Well, Ross Stripling replaced by Chris Bassett. Safe to say that's an upgrade. David Phelps replaced by Eric Swanson. That is an upgrade as well. Raimel Tapia, Jackie Bradley Jr., Bradley Zimmer. I think those three roles have been condensed into Kevin Kiermaier, where Kiermaier can give you similar offensive production to Raimel Tapia. It's a different form of offense, certainly a bit less contact, a bit more game power, but like, you're still getting your 90 weighted runs created plus that Raimel Tapia gave you. He gives you better defense than Jackie Bradley Jr., and he gives you the same speed as Bradley Zimmer. So you've just condensed those. You've gotten the best of those three players in one roster spot, and obviously you're paying a bit more for it, but you're also opening up two additional roster spots that you can now utilize to build out your roster and in turn replace what you've lost in Teoscar Hernandez. So that's like, that's the one piece to me that's gone out that you haven't really replaced or upgraded on yet. But with Stripling, Phelps, Tapia, Bradley, Zimmer, I think you've not only replaced on all of those players that have moved out, but you've actually upgraded on all of them. So the final shoe to drop really is just replacing the offense of Teoscar Hernandez, or potentially even upgrading on it if you can find a way. That's going to be hard to do, but the very least replacing it. And then I think if you look at it objectively, you've actually got a better team going into 2023 than you had in 2022. Is it going to be a 100 win team? No, but I think it would be a team capable of winning 93, 94, 95 games.
Yeah, that's an interesting way to look at it. And I think that makes sense. Like, you outlined that in your latest piece, like the Kiermaier stuff and how he kind of does replace those elements of the Jays. I think it's a pretty convincing case. Bassett over Stripling, clearly an upgrade. Swanson over Phelps, clearly an upgrade. And room to add more on the pitching side. We'll see if they can do that as the offseason unfolds. And then it really does become, what do they do to add just another bat? And, you know, I'm really curious to see where this one goes for the Jays, because, you know, you could look at it like, I think Conforto would be great. I really do. I think that if they could add Michael Conforto on a 1-year deal, this is a guy who's still in his 20s, lifetime OPS of 824, missed last year with shoulder surgery, but should be ready to go for the full 23 season. And that to me is a great pickup if you can do it. I also think Michael Brantley could be a good pickup. Even at the age of 35, he's just a great hitter, amazing bat to ball skills, and some power, incredible command of the strike zone. So those are skills that are very real. And when he's healthy, he's a really good hitter. So both of those guys are good. Here's the thing, though. Like, let's say Brantley costs 15. Let's say Conforto costs 16 or 17 on a 1-year deal. Are the Jays, and I know Mark Shapiro has said that the CBT is not an obstacle, quote, not an obstacle for the Blue Jays. They are now likely to be at least somewhat past the 233 number for 2023. But are they going to push to 250 for the first time in franchise history? Like, I don't know. I mean, I'm posing that as a question. I truly don't know the answer. But if you're signing one of those guys, you're probably pushing toward 250. Whereas if you do take advantage of your leverage in the trade market right now, do you maybe engage with, let's say, the Arizona Diamondbacks and their surplus of left-handed hitting outfielders, Alec Thomas, Jake McCarthy, Dalton Varsho? Does that lead to a trade where you're filling that gap offensively and defensively? Also, you look at Lourdes Gurriel Jr. and Kevin Kiermaier hitting free agency next year. The Jays do not really have an outfield for 2024. It's just not really a thing that they have. So adding someone in trade who's controllable might make sense for the medium term as well.
Well, I do think that if you want to be a big player in MLB, you have to exceed the first threshold of the CBT right now. Yeah. Because I think we're going to see, what, 8 teams, maybe 6 teams, somewhere in that realm, do it this year and more going forward. So like, if you're the Blue Jays, and the Blue Jays have talked about wanting to have a top 10 payroll, towards the back half of the top 10, but top 10, yeah, you're going to have to surpass the CBT because everybody's spending more because inflation is real. So yeah, how far can that go? We don't know. We're going to see. The Blue Jays payroll has been progressively increasing year over year for a while now, at a time, by the way, when there hasn't been a bunch of revenue for the club, when they were away from home for 670 days and they had to spend all this money in Buffalo and Dunedin retrofitting those places, and they're undergoing a massive renovation at Rogers Center and they're building a brand new complex in Dunedin, like all these things, the Blue Jays have continued spending. I guarantee you that their expenses are outpacing their revenues right now. But I would think that there still is some room for Conforto or like a Brantley on this payroll. Do you think they would take, what'd you say, 17? Wouldn't 12 to 14, could you not get it done for one of those guys? Like, are those guys going to get more than Cody Bellinger?
I think it's a great question. Initially in the offseason, I thought Brantley would be around 12 and on a one-year deal. And gradually, my expectations are kind of floating up on a lot of players. When you just look at this market, I think there's a chance Brantley could get multi-years, even though he's obviously getting older and did not have a great year in 2023. So I could see him getting anywhere from, I don't know, 12 to 15 on a one-year deal. Conforto would be below the qualifying offer number, but I think he's more like 15 to 18. Like, if you could get Conforto for 12, do it now. Like, do not wait. That I think baseball-wise, Michael Conforto is the best fit this team can get. So I think if you can do it from a payroll standpoint, if that flexibility is there to go to 250, do it. Keep the catchers. Like, in my opinion, the playing time would sort itself out. There's nothing wrong with having three catchers. So if you have the payroll flexibility, get Conforto, keep the catchers, and then you are good to go at that point.
How much of a risk do you think Conforto is, considering he didn't play at all in 2022 and he's coming off of a shoulder injury, and we saw what a shoulder injury did to Cody Bellinger?
No doubt. And like, there's risk with Conforto. I think there's risk with Brantley, you know, risk more so. I think when Michael Brantley takes the field, he's going to give you a great at bat, but he's going to be slow. He's not going to give you a lot of defense and he might miss a lot of time. So there's risk from that standpoint. Conforto, yes, there's risk with the shoulder. There's also, he's going to need a lot of at-bats in spring training to get his timing back. That's not something you can take for granted after missing that much time. So that's an important element. I wouldn't be stunned at all if he gets off to a slow start in 2023. But he's someone, in my opinion, who can help you a lot. And I think with Bellinger, there would have been a ton of risk. I was never a big fan of adding Bellinger. I would have much preferred to see, like, I think Jock Peterson obviously took the QO from San Francisco, but Jock Peterson would have been a way more favorable addition than Cody Bellinger. I just think chasing upside on a guy whose exit velos are down, whose strikeout rates are up, whose walk rates are down, Bellinger to me is just like, I just don't think he's that good of an offensive player right now. Whereas I think Conforto, maybe there's a lot of uncertainty there. There is risk there, but I really like the idea of Michael Conforto in 23.
What do you think of the idea of taking, say, if you got $20 million to spend or something like that, and spreading it around like 7-7-6 on three more down market guys who kind of spread out your risk a bit more, so it's not all contained in one Conforto or one Bradley? So if you went out and you did like a Joey Gallo, an Adam Frazier, and an AJ Pollock, or like an Edwin Rios, a Trey Mancini, and a Brian Anderson, you know, like what do you think about that sort of formulation? Using some of the roster spots that you opened up, by the way, with Kiermaier condensing Tapia, Bradley, and Zimmer into one.
Okay, I love the concept. So what, I mean, Gallo, I still think Gallo is over 10 million.
Do you?
I would guess Gallo's like 12 over one, but I could be wrong. I could be wrong. And then I don't have the depth chart in front of me. How many position player roster spots do the Blue Jays have to work with right now?
So here's the thing. Right now, Kevin Kiermaier is positioned to be every day in center field, assuming like George Springer is your right fielder and Lourdes Gurriel Jr. is your left fielder and your DH is kind of rotating. So then on your bench, you would have like Espinal Biggio, Nathan Lucas, and Addison Barger.
And Witt. And the two catchers.
Witt might be your second baseman because I had Espinal on the bench. So I have Witt at second base.
Okay. So then you have Espinal and Biggio on the bench.
You got Kirk at catcher. You got, or Dan Jansen. Jansen, Kirk, catcher, DH, right? Moreno's in AAA.
Okay.
You got Witt at second base. So Espinal and Biggio on the bench. Kiermaier's in center. Springer in right. Gurriel in left. So yeah, your bench would be Espinal, Biggio, Lucas, Barger, I don't know, Spencer Horwitz.
Yeah. So they got two spots to work with.
You
right
got
now.
Two bench spots, really.
Yeah. If you have Moreno with AAA, you have two spots to work with. Yeah. With a 13-13 configuration. So, yeah. So you could either do, say, Moreno,
Joey Gallo and Edwin Rios or something, right? Or say you want to pair lefty and a righty, right? So you want Trey Mancini and Joey Gallo.
Yeah. I think, okay. So again, concept, super interesting. I like Gallo as a part-time player. I think that if Gallo is willing to take a part-time role, I have no problem with that. Just don't let him face lefties, and Gallo can be a really good pickup. Here's my question with that is, A, is Gallo willing to accept a role where he's playing 70% of the time? And then B, is Trey Mancini willing to take a role as a free agent where he's going to be the 13th man or the 12th man on a position player group?
I don't know. I haven't asked them. I like the concept. Like, that's why I bring it up, because I like the idea of, like, even one of the more versatile guys, like an Adam Frazier, right? Brian Anderson, like Jerks and Profar, right? Pairing one of those versatile guys who can play a bit infield, play a bit outfield with a bounce back bat in the outfield, or like with a, hey, we're going to give Edwin Rios like regular run and see what that bat could be, because he couldn't get that regular run with the Dodgers, but he has shown a lot in his very limited big league sample. I like that idea of spreading out the risk a bit more than just condensing all the risk into one player.
Yeah, I think it's a super interesting concept. I think if you had a sense that you could get two interesting free agents to sign here, kind of in tandem, then that could work for sure. And then if it's not working in June or July, you cut them loose, you go to the trade market.
It's Addison Barger time, baby.
Yeah, right? Or you're calling on a prospect and someone else has kind of emerged by that. So I think as a concept, it's interesting. I do think that someone like Michael Conforto has more upside than a Joey Gallo or a Trey Mancini. And so then going in that direction is tempting to me, to see if you can get that guy to kind of deliver on his promise for a full season.
A lot of different ways the Blue Jays should go, and a lot of different ways that we should continue to talk about them. We're going to do that and so much more in the second half when it continues on At the Letters.
Listen to At the Letters ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime.
It continues on At the Letters. Arden Swelling, Ben Nicholson Smith, our producer, is Christian Ryan. Ben, Chris Bassett obviously is sort of the centerpiece of the Blue Jays offseason to this point. I imagine he'll likely be the highest impact ad that they make, unless something crazy happens over the next couple of months. It's interesting. Like, I think it's everyone likes this deal. It makes a lot of sense for the Blue Jays. There's nobody panning it. But like on the surface, if you just looked at a 34-year-old starting pitcher signed for 3 years at $21 million per, who is going to be like making a really dramatic downgrade in terms of offensive environment, a guy who's going to be moving from like Oakland Coliseum / Citi Field to Rogers Center, which is a neutral park, but still like quite a downgrade in terms of environment that he's going to be playing at. A guy who's going to have a pretty significant downgrade in shortstop defense, going from Francisco Lindor to Bo Bichette. A guy who's going to be entering a post-shift world, or at least a world where shifts are restricted to a degree so that infielders can't be positioned as optimally behind him. A guy that allows a ton of balls in play, relies on weak contact, doesn't strike a lot of guys out, doesn't have overpowering stuff. Like, all of those elements, I think, would say, well, is this the best bet to be making? So how does that kind of color the way that you look at this deal for the Blue Jays?
Yeah, I don't necessarily expect him to be an all-star again. Really don't think he has to be an all-star pitcher. It kind of reminds me of the Jay Happ deal that he would have signed in his 30s with the Blue Jays. At that point, it was 36-3. Now it's 63-3. Maybe that's just the inflation since that deal for Happ. Marco Estrada, too, signed a similar multi-year deal like this when he was in his 30s with the Jays. And I think these deals, they've got value for a contending team. You really want the back and middle of your rotation to be stable. You don't want to overextend your bullpen. And look, you're not going to just hand it over to anyone with a history of logging innings. Tanner Roark, obviously, a very good example of the fact that innings in your rearview mirror do not assure you of quality innings going forward. But, and I know you broke this down in an article this week at Sportsnet, but the weapons exist for Chris Bassitt to continue getting success in the major leagues against very good hitters, regardless of what park he's in or who's playing behind him. And I think part of this is the sinker that he's got. Part of it is the command, where he is very, very good at putting his pitches within the strike zone. You look at some of the command plus metrics that folks like Eno Saris have. Bassitt grades out very well, as does Ross Stripling, by the way. But Bassitt has very, very good command, mixes his pitches well. That's a good combination. I think it's sustainable for at least a couple years.
I do think he has a good profile for being productive into his mid-30s, a better profile than a lot of guys would have, because, as we said, he doesn't rely on velocity. So when you don't rely on velocity, it's okay that if you lose a little bit of it, if you lose a tick or two as you get up to 35 or 36, because you're throwing six different pitches and you're commanding them all to different parts of the zone and you're sequencing intelligently and you do this weird drop and drive thing in your delivery where you're like 6'5", but you release the ball with one of the lowest release points in baseball somehow, because you're like scraping the back of like your right knee over the back of the mound as you deliver. So all of a sudden your pitches have some deception to them. They look weird coming out of your hand and hitters don't know what to expect, and you locate them so consistently to the edges. I think all that is well and good. I just can't shake the feeling that this is a guy who is going from some environments and from some infields and organizations that made a lot of sense for him and that helped accentuate his strengths. And he's having a downgrade in those things. Like I said, you can't shift as much behind him as you once could. He's not going to have Francisco Lindor behind him. He is going to have Matt Chapman behind him. That's going to help. But like I said, with the, you know, Matt Chapman can only cover so much ground. Like, your shortstop and whoever is primarily playing at second base are going to have to do a lot of work as well in this shift restricted world. And then you just think about the fact that, like, I just don't know that the expectation for Chris Bassitt going forward should be the like 3.42, 3.15, 2.29 ERAs that he's put up over the last 3 years. Like, I feel like a 4 ERA going forward would be a much more reasonable expectation, which is fine, but not the guy that he has been to this point.
Completely agree. And I think, you know, if we were setting over-unders right now for Chris Bassitt, and if someone put the over-under at 3.42, we're both taking the over. No question. I mean, there's league factors, shift factors, team, park, defense, all of that points to the ERA going up. But his ERA plus last year, 1.13, 13% better than league average. And to me, I actually think that's achievable again. And the number might be 4.15, but I think that he can still deliver a similar amount of value in, I'm not going to say 180 innings, but let's say 165 innings. I think that's pretty reasonable to expect. And then that's probably a 2 or 3 win player for the Jays.
I do think it is imperative that he keep the ball on the ground, because when the ball's in the air, you're susceptible to home runs. And like, look, home run split or home road splits aren't everything, but it does stand out to me that Chris Bassitt's home runs per nine double on the road over the course of his career. You look at his career home road splits. At home, it's a 2.68 ERA. On the road, it's a 4.26. The home runs per nine at home, 0.6. The home runs per nine on the road, 1.2. And where has Chris Bassitt's home starts been made? They've been made at the Coliseum, which is obviously a really hard place to hit a home run, and at Citi Field, which has this weird and unexplainable exit velocity suppressing effect, whereby since it opened in 2009, it has the second lowest average exit velocity allowed across baseball. So, and you can just kind of go across the home road splits for Bassitt's career, and every number is much higher on the road than it has been at home. So, like, I do think that there are some signs there to suggest that, yeah, like, Bassitt is going to be maybe even more of a 4 than a 3 going forward. And look, that's what $21 million is going to get you these days. Like you said, like that's inflation, right? Like that's, this is the present day Jay Happ. And like the Blue Jays are having to go out and spend $21 million on like a number four starter in their rotation because they aren't developing number four starters internally, because they have so few success stories on the development side, pitching wise, lately. And like that has really been a problem for this team. Like that's why you've had to build this rotation, Gausman, Bassett, Ryu, all via free agency, and then Berríos via trade and extension, because Alek Manoah is like the one homegrown starting pitcher that you have, because you haven't had success stories from Nate Pearson and TJ Zoik and Adam Kloffenstein, right? And Joey Murray and Nick Allgaier and all these guys, you know, because you haven't had success from the guys that you even traded for, the young pitchers you traded for, like Anthony Kay and Thomas Hatch and Trent Thornton. Like you, ultimately, this team's going to need to do a better job of developing pitchers internally, because ultimately it's going to have to spend a lot more on the position player side than it is right now with Bo Bichette, with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. There's going to need to be a solution at third base beyond next season, whether that's a Matt Chapman deal or somebody else coming in to replace him. Like ultimately the Blue Jays are just going to need a bit more efficiency on the starting pitching side when it comes to their payroll. Because right now you look up and down this pitching staff and it is mostly like the guys that you are relying on are, for the most part, outside Jordan Romano and Alek Manoah, guys who have been brought in from outside the organization.
Yeah, and you can't just go every single year and spend, you know, $20 million on another starter in free agency. It's working for now. They have to do it for now. Probably not sustainable, so they need to see, let's say, a Ricky Tiedemann step up, not to put undue pressure on a pitcher who's still just 20 years old, but let's just say a pitcher like Ricky Tiedemann, maybe Ricky Tiedemann himself. That would be really good for this team if they can do that. But it's, you know, it is interesting, like even seeing Bassett and his, you know, reunion with Matt Chapman. And I just clicked through here just as a quick aside, Art, and to the 2020 Oakland days when those two guys were playing together. That team was actually so good. They had Sean Murphy, Matt Olson, Marcus Semien was on that team. Laureano, Mark Canna was on that team. Bassett, Jesus Luzardo, Sean Manaea, Frankie Montas, Liam Hendricks. Like, this was such a good team. And now the A's are an embarrassment. They are a shell of a major league team. It's actually so sad to see them parading around the roster with like Aledmys Diaz and Shea Langeliers as franchise players. Not good by the Oakland A's.
I just think that the Blue Jays are going to need to start producing some better talent from there, from internally, as the A's did for a number of years there, which is how they built those teams. Like all those players that you cited, those aren't players that they went out and signed or as free agents. Those are all homegrown players. I just think that the Blue Jays have had a bit of a gap lately in terms of like providing that sort of upward roster refresh from their system. You know, after Bo Bichette and Vladimir Guerrero Jr., and you can put Lourdes Gurriel Jr. in there as well. After those players, I mean, there's been a bit of a gap here, and the Blue Jays are going to need more, particularly on the pitching side. Look at the Houston Astros, who just won a World Series and are going to return a rotation next year with these guys like Framber and Urquidy and, you know, Christian Javier, Luis Garcia. Like, these are all homegrown dudes. And then beyond that, they've got a Forrest Whitley coming and a Hunter Brown coming, you know, and the Astros go out into free agency and they're like, yeah, really, the only thing we need is the replacement for Yuli Gurriel at first. So let's go out and grab Jose Abreu like right off the bat early in free agency and then just sit back because we're done. And we're good, and we're returning a World Series winner next year that is pretty much homegrown all around the diamond. Like, I do think the Blue Jays need to move more towards that model, because like you said, I mean, there's going to come a point where if you want to retain Bo, you want to retain Vlad, those guys can be costing you a whole bunch of money. You might not just have those $30 million sitting around anymore to go out and fill your roster holes via free agency.
Yeah, it's interesting too, because when you look at the way the Jays have developed, they have areas of impressive depth, like obviously catcher with Kirk and Moreno and Jansen. That would be the envy of any organization as far as young catching in Major League Baseball. And yet you look at the outfield and it's been really bereft of usable Major League talent in the last few years, where you've had your Billy McKinney's and your Anthony Alford's come up and it just hasn't happened. And then starting pitching wise, you've got one really great success story in Alek Manoah, not a ton beyond that. So to have a bit more balance, you know, they could really use another starting pitcher stepping up, as you were saying, with some of those names that haven't landed. Outfield, I mean, again, this is a question for next offseason, but that is an area they will have to address, and it's totally doable. I mean, worst case, you're the Toronto Blue Jays, a winning team with money to spend. You can sign two outfielders if you have to do that. That is not an organizational crisis, but it's still something to kind of keep in mind as we observe the different layers of depth, of weaknesses, strengths within this team.
It's another reason why I would be really hesitant to trade Gabriel Moreno right now if I was the Blue Jays, as they are exploring that catcher market and trying to see if there's something that they can do post Sean Murphy being moved and, you know, the Contreras's be moving and Vasquez and all this, like as they try to maybe capitalize on some of the scarcity out there for catchers right now. And a bunch of the clubs, like, you know, I mean, even the Astros, who I just mentioned, they could want a catcher. You know, Arizona obviously has been talked about a lot, and the Giants and et cetera. They, like, as they try to maybe address, you know, move a catcher to address another roster area, I'd be very cautious with moving Gabriel Moreno, because he is somebody who could be very valuable to this team in his pre-arb years. If he's as good as we all believe that he's going to be, maybe not necessarily as a full-time catcher, maybe as like a Dalton Varsho, right? Like maybe as a guy who catches 50 games a year and plays left field for 50 games a year. And then as like 20 to 30 at DH. Like, I just think that that piece for the Blue Jays is one that they might want to think very, very hard about hanging on to as they continue to turn this roster over going forward.
Yeah, and I think they're going to really, they have to consider it. They will consider trading those guys. It's so interesting, that decision of which one they do move if they do end up trading them. And I don't have a clear read on who they would want to trade out of those three, which is probably by design. I'm sure the Jays want to keep that as opaque as possible, even if they do have their internal preference as to who they might be more willing to move. But it's tough because Major League Team 2023, Moreno is clearly the most dispensable of those three. He is the guy that you need the least out of the three, and yet longer term, there's a lot of value there.
What would you think about Danny Jansen and Ian Happ? Something around that idea.
Now, Ian Happ, really good player, switch hitter, gives you a really good offense, corner bat. Now, do you have it in front of you? How many, is it 1 or 2 years before he's a free agent?
He is entering his walk year.
Yeah. So 2 years for Jansen, 1 year for Happ. To me, and Happ's not giving you center field, which, you know, that's okay now that you have Kiermaier and Springer. I think you need more back if you're the Jays than just Ian Happ. Like, I think you have to balance the scales. And if I'm trading one of these guys as the Toronto Blue Jays, I'm trying to get more than just a rental back in return, personally.
Alejandro Kirk for Dalton Varsho. Where would you be on that?
I think Kirk for Bieber is an interesting framework. I don't think there's been any traction there. I think that Kirk for Varsho, it's interesting. I think Moreno for Varsho is maybe more interesting if you're the Jays. But I don't know where Arizona stands. It sounds like, based on some of the reporting, that Varsho is someone that Arizona really does want to hold on to, along with Corbin Carroll, and maybe Alek Thomas and Jake McCarthy are the ones that they would move off of. But where do you land on Kirk for Varsho?
Could Moreno not be Varsho himself? Like, don't the Blue Jays have Varsho at home in Moreno?
I think Moreno, yes, to some extent, yes. But I think that Varsho now is basically a full-time outfielder and an elite outfielder, whereas Moreno is a guy with the skills to be an average outfielder. Or sorry, I shouldn't even say the skills. I think Moreno has the potential to be an average outfielder. We don't know that he has the skills. We do know that he has the athleticism and some of the skills to be a catcher. I think Varsho and Moreno are on different points of the catcher outfield spectrum.
I think that Moreno has the tools, But I also think that Lourdes Gurriel Jr. has the tools. And we've seen how that's gone, right?
Like, yeah.
Moreno's got a big arm. Gurriel's got a big arm. Moreno's quick. Gurriel's, you know, Moreno's faster, but Gurriel's pretty quick. He should be fast enough to play the outfield. And Lourdes Gurriel Jr. is quickly playing himself into, like, first baseman status at this point. So I would like to see it with Moreno. I would like to see it and see how it looked. I don't know. I think he's got the tools and the athleticism, certainly. But yeah, until you've actually thrown a guy out there into left field for 100 games, you don't really know.
Yeah, exactly. I think, you know, there are other teams that could line up for Moreno. Like, I think the Tigers are a team that probably would have interest in him and he would be perfect for their cycle. But then do you need a third team involved to get that deal to where the Blue Jays are getting something meaningful back? And so, you know, I speculated to you and Shy this week via text. I'm like, what about the Marlins? Do the Marlins get involved? I feel like the Marlins just haven't done anything this offseason of substance. Could Pablo Lopez go back to the Jays and you kind of work something out there? But, you know, and this is all speculation, at least, you know, as we're discussing these possible trades. But I think that there's room for creativity for the Jays to get something done. And I thought Kepler for Jansen could have been really interesting. Until the Twins went out and got Vasquez, I thought Kepler, and obviously the Cardinals, I mean, they're out of it now, but Nupar would have been great. Carlson could have been pretty interesting. I thought Kepler for Jansen could have been a really good framework because to me, Max Kepler is someone who has way underperformed what his OPS is. I think he can be an 850 OPS player in this league for 2 years, and that's not something to take lightly. But of the remaining options, like, I'll be honest, I'm not totally sure, aside from Varsho, whether those Diamondbacks guys make a ton of sense. It just seems like they're available, which is something.
Yeah, I have a hard time moving Moreno for the reasons that I said. I have a hard time moving Kirk because he is so important to this pitching staff now with the way that these pitchers work, especially you add Bassett, a guy who needs a good framer behind the plate, a good receiver, a good game caller. Kirk obviously is exceptional at the bottom of the zone with his framing and with his receiving. That's going to be huge for a sinker guy like Bassett. It's already huge for Alec Manoa. It can be huge for Kevin Gausman and the splitter, obviously. If there was something that made sense with Jansen, I guess you could do that. But then I need to backfill for Jansen by signing a veteran catcher because I'm not entering the season with just Kirk and Moreno on my 40 or on my big league roster as my only catching options, because then all of a sudden one of those guys gets hurt and where are you turning? So if there was something out there that made sense for Jansen, and with Jansen being 2 years from free agency, I don't think you're going to find your controllable young outfielder for him. Like, that just doesn't sound realistic. So to me, it would have to be sort of the Jansen for Hap situation. Like, it would have to be a sort of like for like sort of thing. Somebody who is at a similar stage in their team control and somebody who is also somewhat of a veteran. And maybe Jansen fills a catching hole for someone else. And like I said, Ian Hap could fill the outfield hole for the Blue Jays. I don't know if there's another framework like that out there. But then if I'm doing that, I then have to go out and get like an Austin Hedges or an Omar Narvaez or Tucker Barnhart. Like, I have to go out then and backfill as well, because I'm not going to feel very confident and self-assured if I'm going into the season with just Kirk and Moreno on my roster.
Yeah, I think also just as a message to the organization and the pitchers, like, you know, you want to arrive there, and a message to Moreno too, potentially. Like, I'm not sure that he's done enough to have a job handed to him in spring training. Like, I don't know that he's just a lock to be on the starting roster of a team with World Series aspirations, given what he's done. Not to say that he won't contribute, because he will, but I don't know that it's just fait accompli he's going to be starting for this team. So I agree. I think a veteran catcher has to be on your radar in that situation if you're trading a Jansen or a Kirk. And so that's where, like, if you could get someone who's a young starting pitcher or a young center fielder for Moreno, comparable control, comparable upside, that has the potential to be a real win-win for the Jays. But we'll see if that option's out there. And I don't think they really have to rush this, because I do think the catching market runs through them at this point.
Well, there's so much scarcity now that everyone else has moved. So yeah, if you want a catcher, I mean, there's the free agent like options that I said, like the Narvaez is probably one of the better ones left. Like, I don't know who else would really intrigue you on the free agent market. And I don't know what other catcher is really going to be available via trade. So yeah, if you're one of the, and what we've probably listed off, like six or seven clubs now that could be fits for catchers, I mean, the Blue Jays are by far the best option at this point.
Oh yeah, exactly. And that's a good spot for them to be in. It's going to be really telling what they do, because they've said all along that they don't feel that they need to trade one of these catchers. But we'll see. I mean, I'm sure they'll have some pretty good offers to sift through. I'm sure they've already gotten indications from teams as to what they could get for these guys. And then even what they do on the outfield front will be telling, because if they do go out and sign somebody, that might be an indication that they're going to sit with what they have on the catching side. And so all these pieces kind of fit together, I think, as the Jays try to finish up this offseason here, because they're probably, I don't know, like I think they're more than halfway done their offseason, but how they finish it is going to be really important for this team.
What do you think about one more leverage reliever at the back end of this bullpen? And that would probably necessitate some subtraction from the bullpen, obviously. Yeah, like that would necessitate moving out like a Trevor Richards or a Julian Merriweather at this point, honestly, like you could think about, or whoever it's going to be. But what do you think about just bolstering the back end of that bullpen right now and really fortifying it for not just the regular season, but honestly for the playoffs?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a need in July. So might as well just jumpstart it and get something done now. They've checked on some pretty high upside names, including Alex Reyes, who's coming back from injury. I know Shai has linked them to Liam Hendricks, a former target of the Jays. This is speculation when I say this, but could a deal around Liam Hendricks and Yusei Kikuchi make any sense? I don't know. Not sure. I think Kikuchi's contract probably looks better with 20 over 2 remaining on it than it did a couple months ago. Not to say that I've heard anything concrete there at all, but that is a speculative thought. And more broadly, they're poking around on relievers. Not that they have to get something done, but some people suggest it's more likely that they would add a reliever at this point than another starting pitcher. And so clearly there's an openness to adding on that front, and not as a, you know, not just someone to round things out, but someone to really push it forward.
I love the Reyes idea as a kind of low cost flyer. Yeah. Like it would depend on the terms, but like, I mean, he's still only 28, and I mean, his stuff is as electric as anybody's, but the health, the availability hasn't quite been there. I'm still wondering about Taylor Rogers, who's out there as a lefty. I mean, like, I think there's going to be so much value in his deal for whoever signs him to it, because he just had this like spectacularly disastrous end to the season with Milwaukee and the Padres, when like anything that could go wrong for him did. But I don't think there are any indicators in there that suggest that he is like a vastly different guy than he was for the several seasons prior, when it was like really strong strikeout to walk and the stuff was getting crazy whiffs. The slider's a frisbee, like his sinker is super heavy and generates ground balls and honestly like misses bats at a great level. And just adding another lefty to the back end of that bullpen, so it's not just Tim Mesa, or if you say Kikuchi's going to be like, if you're going to try to turn him into Andrew Miller, like we don't know yet what the plan is going to be for Kikuchi in 2023, but he's certainly not guaranteed a rotation spot at this point. So maybe he's a solution there for the Blue Jays, or an option for them. But I think Rogers would round out this bullpen in a really nice way if the money was there for the Blue Jays to do it.
Yeah, agreed. I think, you know, you look at just every fly ball just seemed to leave the yard for him toward the end of last year. I still think he probably gets 27 over 3. So, you know, that's not like a bargain level deal, but he's really good. So I think keep your options open there.
27 over 3. So that would be 9 per. I mean, that would honestly be tempting for me. I don't love the term, obviously. Like, I'd rather it was 218, even 220, I would do. But like, I just think there's going to be a lot of value there because like you said, like you look at just the results at the end and it's that classic small sample reliever craziness where there's nothing different about his pitches and nothing really too different about his approach. The stuff is still there. The ability is still there. And that's why I think you could probably buy low on him.
Yeah. And if you could get him for 18 over two, I think that'd be a great deal. And, you know, it would just lengthen the bullpen. And it's the kind of deal that like it might prevent you from having to give up a really good prospect for someone in the summertime. So this is where, you know, the Jays' ability to spend, whether it's here, whether it's on an outfielder, obviously on a Chris Bassett, it means that they're not going to be out there if, you know, pending health. They shouldn't have to be out there trying to give up the farm for a number three starter at the trade deadline. So all these things kind of interact with each other and their increased ability to spend really helps them on a lot of different fronts.
Well, yeah, you made a really good point. They're going to be looking for pitching at the deadline as they have been for the last couple of years. So why not get some of it now? Like, why not get ahead of it now? Like, I think on the minor league deals, like I think the Blue Jays need to do a better job of building that out at the end of this offseason than they did coming out of the lockout. Like I think just layering in some more veterans at AAA on minor league deals, bringing more guys into camp, just like insulating yourself against the inevitable injuries you're going to have and the inevitable underperformance that you're going to see. Like you just want to have more of those options internally because trades are hard to make prior to the deadline, like prior to, I don't know what day it is this year, August 2nd, whenever, prior to like the, literally the 48, 72 hours leading up to that day, it's really hard to make trades in season. We've seen that time and again. So I think the Blue Jays need to be like very active in offering minor league deals far and wide and bringing in as many capable veterans as they can who, if they needed to be called upon, could be replacement level, could give you that depth so that you're not like, well, let's throw Brandon Isert in there and see how it goes. Well, Adrian Hernandez's fastball is like 91, 92. Let's see if it can play at the big league level and he can get guys fishing at his changeup. I think he wants some more certainty going into spring training.
For sure. It's kind of the Dodgers model, right? Where they take these guys who maybe are a little bit hurt or there's a lot of uncertainty and they just toss them all together and usually it works, especially, you know, with the Dodgers pitching infrastructure and some of the things that they're able to do to get the most out of their pitchers. But, you know, Andrew Heaney goes there, has a great year. Okay, moves on. And that's almost, it reminds me too of the Giants model where they just seem to be the kings of this like prove it deal for starting pitchers where every year they're out there signing guys to short-term deals. And then, okay, off you go. Kevin Gausman signed with the Jays, we'll find someone else. Carlos Rodon signed with the Yankees, we'll find someone else. And that's not easy to do. You have to obviously identify the right pitchers and help them get the most out of it. But for the Jays, if they can do that on some minor league deals, small scale with guys who give them 20, 30, 40 innings in 2023, that's going to be really helpful. And it does prevent them from having to dip into their prospects too much.
Yeah, the Giants obviously have a great environment for pitchers to go to. Ross Stripling's going to love pitching there, just as Sean Manaea is as well. But they also clearly have very cunning pitching development folks and a really good team working with their pitchers, which gets back to the sort of lack of development I was mentioning with the Blue Jays internally with their pitchers. Like that's where you get those little gains, like you get those little surprise stories that cumulatively can have a really big impact if you were having like two or three of those guys coming up internally and providing value in a single season.
You know, I will say though that that's very true. I think I did hear from one agent representing a prominent starting pitcher this winter, and the agent went out of his way to me saying how much he has liked what Pete Walker has done from Steven Matz, from Robbie Ray, from some of these different major league pitchers who have been able to bounce back. So I think that the Pete Walker reputation as someone who can work really well, I mean, we talk about it all the time, of course, and you know, fans hear it on the broadcast and as they should, people listening to our podcast know very well the impact that Pete Walker has had. But it's interesting to hear that reflected back from, you know, people who are not necessarily tuned in to every single Jays game and following it as closely as we do.
All right, Ben, that is going to be it. And that'll be it for this year on At the Letters, unless the Blue Jays do something absolutely jaw-dropping and game-changing. You are likely not going to hear from us again until 2023. So thank you to everyone for listening and for being with us through another year of At the Letters.
Yeah, I will echo those thanks. Thanks to everyone for listening. Definitely enjoy having our listeners along for the ride. We had a lot of ground to cover this year. Did some podcasts from some cool places like Dunedin, like New York. Hopefully lots more to come on those fronts in 2023 as we continue to build out the ATL experience here. And thanks also to Amazon. They put us on their best Canadian podcast list for 2022. That's awesome. And we were listed as well as a show that followed the action by Apple Podcasts. Arden, I think we definitely followed the action this year in 2022.
Yeah, real ones know. There would be no denying that. For Ben Nicholson Smith, for our producer, Christian Ryan, my name's Arden Zwelling. Thanks so much for listening. Talk to you next year on At the Letters.